Hello.
Welcome to Tom and Lorenzo's Pop Style Opinion Fest.
We're here to render judgment on the worlds of celebrity, pop culture, television, and fashion.
Strap yourselves in for some hardcore opinionating, darlings.
This is Tom and Lorenzo's Pop Style Opinion Fest.
Tom and Lorenzo.
And this is the Pop Style Opinion Fest. Hello, kittens. Welcome back to another edition of the PSO. I am the T in your T-Lo, Tom Fitzgerald. And I'm here with the low in your T-Lo, Lorenzo Marquez, my lovely giggling husband.
Hello.
He's just giddy because it's Friday morning. The refrigerator repairman just left.
I know. Things are under control.
Locked down and under control, which is how Lorenzo likes things.
It's true. It's very,
very true. Most of his work is done for the day, so he just wants to speed through this podcast and go back to bed.
No.
He literally just said this. So it's a little bit of a potpourri this week. We're doing our usual look at Project Runway, and we'll be bringing that up in a bit. And Lorenzo has a few things to get off his chest regarding goings on in the fashion world, correct?
Yes. And no, it's just something we noticed.
Yes. But before we get to any of that, I'm going to take care of some book business.
Yes, we have dates now.
We have tour dates. One of the first things I wanted to put out there for fans of the Pop Style Opinion Fest podcast is that we will be doing a live podcast in New York on March 4th at 7 p.m. at Housing Works Book Cafe.
Very NPR.
Yes. So what that means is we will be appearing at Housing Works as part of our book tour. But we're setting up the mics there for our reading and Q&A. And that way, all of you can come and watch us spew into these microphones live, but you also get a taste of our book and you can ask us any questions about it. And those of you who can't make it can download it that week and listen to it. So it's, you know, win-win all around for everyone. So I wanted to get that out there first for the PSO fans that we are doing a live podcast in New York City on Wednesday, March 4th at 7 p.m. So if you can make it, we'd love
to have you guys there.
But then Lorenzo and I were like, you know what, why don't we just read off the dates that we have now? We are waiting for a tour card from Penguin so that we can post that on social media and on our site. And also, we're actually adding dates that hopefully we'll be able to report on soon. Right now, most of where we are touring is on the East Coast. But we're hoping that will change. We're not hoping that will change. We're making plans to change.
Right. We just don't have the dates confirmed.
We just don't have the dates yet. But I want to shout out to our Philly peeps. The day the book drops, Tuesday, March 3rd, we will be at the Philadelphia Free Library at 1901 Vine Street at 7:30 p.m. We're doing a reading and a Q&A, and we will be selling books there. And I really hope people will come out for their hometown boys.
Which is awesome because the free library is...
Oh, my God. I did all of my... I know. When I was in college, that is where I went and did all my research back then because we didn't really have computers or the internet. So you would go and look at index cards and then go, copy at the copy machine different things that you needed. But, oh, my God, I spent hours there and there's something really... very touching, and I don't know. I just love that we're being called back, and we're going to be in the auditorium giving a reading. And it's such a gorgeous space.
Yeah, I used to go there often to do my research.
Philly folks, Philadelphia Free Library, 7:30 p.m. Tuesday, March 3rd. Wednesday, March 4th, we'll be in New York City doing our live podcast. Thursday, March 5th, we will be in Boston at the WBUR City Space at 7 p.m.
And it's giving Tom's a talk, first time in Boston, isn't
Q&A, it? Q&A and live read. Not live read, reading. Yes, that's my first time in Boston. Let's see. After that, Friday, March 13th, we will be in D.C. at Politics and Prose Bookstore at 7 p.m. Saturday, March 21st, we will be at Midtown Scholar Bookstore in Harrisburg, PA at 7 p.m. I'm actually really excited about that because, A, I've never been to Harrisburg, even though I'm a PA resident, and B, they're partnering with their LGBT center, which is literally right next door to the store. So there's going to be this, like, there's going to be drag queens in attendance. It should be a lot of fun. Friday, April 24th, we will be at the University of Chicago Logan Center for the Arts for a presentation, reading, and Q&A at 7 p.m. And Saturday, May 16th, we will be taking part in the Gaithersburg, Maryland Book Festival and appearing again at Politics and Prose Bookstore in Washington, D.C. There are other dates coming,
yes.
But right mm-hmm. now it's Philly, New York, Boston, D.C., Harrisburg, Chicago, and then D.C. again. So we will have all of those dates for you to put in your little calendars.
We
really would love to see you there.
Right.
Our favorite thing about the list, our first book dropping, was going out and doing readings
yeah,
and signings
to
and meeting people.
Meet you guys. It was awesome. It was so much fun. One of the events, my mom was there and she met, readers and stuff. They took picture with her. She still
talks
about
it. It's just our favorite thing in the world because our jobs are so solitary. It's just the two of us. So to get out in the world and I don't mean like to get applause or anything like that, but to actually see people face to face and talk about our work or answer questions about it and stuff like that. That
it's just
is
awesome.
A gift.
Yeah, I still remember every moment. And when we went to the Mall of America, mm-hmm. remember two ladies, they drove like hours to see us in the snow. And I'm so touched by that. I mean, it's just very, very sweet.
It is.
We can't thank you guys enough for the support, for showing up for those events. It does matter that you guys show up.
We don't expect you to drive hours in the snow to come see us.
But
we
would
love it if you're anywhere near any of those places on those dates. We would love it if you came out to see us because we promise we'll show you a good time.
Yes.
We'll read and we'll answer questions
will be
and
fun.
We'll
be a lot of
juggle
fun.
And do magic tricks. Everything but our... We just won't do drag. Don't ask us to do drag.
I might show up at Hibiscus. I think I'm thinking of doing the makeup.
All right.
Hibiscus
Have
makeup for the
that.
Event. Yeah, why not?
Okay. Moving on. Lorenzo.
Yeah, so
matters of fashion.
You know, we credit when we have, and most of the time we do credit the looks on the red carpet. And I've noticed.
We
both noticed that there's a lot of Dolce & Gabbana back on the red carpet, and it's interesting. And it's like
Okay, let's backtrack.
Yes, of course,
Lorenzo.
Yes,
always need help with the setup.
My brain is everywhere.
5 minutes ahead.
It's scattered everywhere.
Okay.
I have to collect it to, you know,
the reason this is notable is because Dolce & Gabbana suffered a string of PR scandals, not least of which was a rather scandalous and largely decried ad last year going out to the Chinese market, I mm-hmm. believe, correct? And it featured a Chinese model trying to eat pizza with chopsticks, and there were voiceovers making some rather inappropriate comments, and it wound up offending a lot of people, not least of which the fashion buying public in China were completely outraged by it. And that's just one of a number of scandals that hit the brand. That and both Stefano and Domenico are kind of assholes in the public.
Yeah, well, that's the part.
They say really nasty shit. Their politics is kind of questionable, and it's not hard to see them as racist.
Yeah, I mean, the ads were terrible, but it wasn't just the ads. It's the way they responded to the backlash and the negative comments about them. They were just nasty on Instagram. They were just very, very attacking everyone and just being very defensive.
They were largely acting like the untouchable figures they have basically turned out to be. They knew the fashion world was not going to turn their backs.
And it was just bad time on their part because they were having this huge anniversary or whatever celebration in China. And a lot of the models were Chinese, obviously, or Asian, and they were uncomfortable with walking the runway, so they had to cancel the event. It was a huge, huge thing. It was everywhere. Everyone talked about it. And that's the point we're trying to make here, is that everyone talks about it. Everyone talks about something for a few days, and then they just drop it. That's our culture now. And sometimes it's healthy, but... And sometimes people apologize for the mistakes they made, and you know, you have to take that into consideration because you know you can't like cancel somebody for the rest of their lives unless it's something horrible.
I don't know about that. I just want to again point out that in recent weeks, just this week, Greta Gerwig stepped out in D&G, Blake Lively stepped out in D&G. Gwen Stefani at the Grammys, the Duchess of Cambridge, Lupita Nyong'o last week at the Santa Barbara Film Festival. These are all on our site. Dwayne Johnson a couple weeks ago wore a D&G suit for his premiere. And I, again, I'm just trying to put this in context that there was a lot of outcry at the time a couple months ago when all of these things were going on that, you know, and there were stylists who were saying that they were not going to, you know, use the brand anymore. And all of that is largely forgotten now and people are just wearing it.
Well, the same thing with sites selling the merchandise, like selling Dolce & Gabbana items. They took them down. I mean, it was a big, big thing. They took them down and, you know, now they're back up. I mean, they just go back to business as usual. And people forget things. And the part about Dolce & Gabbana that upsets me most is that they did not apologize.
Why would they apologize? I mean,
They went away, but they didn't actually apologize. It was some lame excuse.
They knew
later.
That they didn't have to. They knew that... they could act like total assholes and celebrities would still go out wearing their stuff and fashion magazines would still, you know, push their stuff.
And it sucks because I have a lot of Dolce & Gabbana in my closet. We do. And it sucks. I look at it and I'm like, oof, I'm not going to wear this. I just feel, you know, icky about it. But my point is that, especially with celebrities in the fashion industry, they're very quick to support something for 24 hours. And then they drop it.
Right.
They want to be part of the conversation.
I still think it's rather interesting that Marchesa is still fighting to get its way back.
Right.
And D&G there was like literally no blip whatsoever. It lasted 5 minutes and it's as if it never happened. And I don't know. I'm not... The thing with Dolce & Gabbana is we can point to actually Mr. Dolce and Mr. Gabbana and the asshole things that they have done.
I know, on Instagram,
and their brand
horrible.
Has done. The thing with Marchesa is it's guilty because Georgina Chapman is married to Harvey Weinstein, or was. And it's I know there are stories that she may have turned a blind eye or that she allowed him to use her brand and push her brand on starlets, but I'm still not comfortable with the idea that she should be canceled or her brand should be canceled because she was married to an abuser.
Right.
It's a lot more likely that she was either a victim of or had blinded herself. I'm sure she wasn't completely ignorant of, and I realize this is where people have the problem
with her
brand. I'm not trying to absolve her or her brand. I think it's complicated, but I also think it was really easy for people to cancel the wife of an abuser and her brand, but these racist assholes, nobody even batted an eye for them.
Right. And I think, yeah, it's the PR machine also. I think it's stronger with them. And people love Dolce & Gabbana. I mean, and it's a great look for the red carpet. And they just, you know, they're embracing it again. So you see a lot of it now. We saw a lot of it now. We saw a lot of it in the past 2 weeks. And it was just, you know, that's how it is. And it's interesting to see how it's going to go because, yeah. But we all of a sudden we saw so many looks on the red carpet. So
yeah.
That's that. But it's just the way the fashion industry is and how we tend to get very aggressive about something with social media and everything now. And then we just drop it. We forget about it.
We forget about it.
And move on to the next one.
I know there are some people who feel that we should not be featuring any celebrity wearing D&G on the red carpet, but honestly, that's crippling us as a form of independent fashion media. If everybody else is going to cover these events, and they are, asking us as a small piece of independent media to limit our coverage in a competitive market, it's just not, it's not viable for us.
Right.
And it shouldn't be taken, again, we're doing fine, but we are a small drop in the bucket compared to like Condé Nast and Hearst magazines and that sort of thing, not to mention the billion-dollar fashion industry itself. And you shouldn't overstate what kind of quote-unquote influence we have. Like, people are like, well, you're legitimizing them by putting Dolce & Gabbana. And it's like, look, we don't have that kind of influence on fashion, on celebrities, on any of it.
No, two things here. First one, we don't do ad campaigns anymore. We don't do
collections. And we don't feature their collections.
So we don't promote the brand.
Wait, you should stop. So there's no misunderstanding here. When he says we don't do it, he means we're not featuring their spreads on our whiteboard.
Mm-hmm. Like
whether or not Dolce & Gabbana shows up on the ads on our site is not something we actually have a lot of control over.
No, what I mean is like the whiteboard, for example, features with ad campaigns and collections and things like that. That way of promotion, featuring them, we don't do that anymore. We only ID the look when a celebrity is wearing it on the red carpet. And in a way, I feel like we should do it so you know who's wearing it. Yeah, so you know who's wearing the brand. Because if we never feature them, then you're going to think, oh my God, nobody's wearing them. Not that you only read us, but my point is that we're just showing, well look, it's right out there again.
Not to overstate our role in all of this, but from a praxis point of view, from an ethical standards point of view, I have always maintained that things like our red carpet coverage is a form of opinion journalism. That's basically what it is.
Right.
So, yes, we're there to give our opinion on these items and rate them the same way a critic would for a film or a television show or that sort of thing. Not obviously rarely with the sort of depth you apply to things like film critics and television critics. But even so, it's operating under kind of the same rules. And part of that means that there's a reportage aspect to it. In other words, we are reporting on the red carpet by showing you who was wearing Dolce. Again, I don't want to overstate who we are. We're not. To call us journalists, even though blogging is legitimately a form of journalism, but I've never truly been comfortable calling us that. But we are critics, and written public criticism is a form of opinion journalism. And I have always maintained that from that perspective, we should continue to report on who is wearing Dolce & Gabbana. That's not showing support to the brand. That's simply doing our jobs, presenting the basic landscape of the modern red carpet. If you just pretend that all of these... And there's a reason I named all the people that I named, Duchess of Cambridge, Gwen Stefani, you know, Lupita Nyong'o. We're not talking C and D list stars at little background events. We're talking major stars at premiere, Dwayne Johnson at the Jumanji premiere. You know what I mean? Like, it's back and it never went away. And it would be irresponsible of us in a way to just ignore it and not ever feature those posts.
I agree.
So I know it's a sticky idea because we've gotten some pushback from readers in featuring these times that stars have worn D&G on the red carpet. But we feel like it's, you know, in our best interests and our job. It's part of our job description to consider to continue featuring them.
And to the point that sometimes, I think lately I haven't even included the runway look for Dolce & Gabbana because I just want to say they're wearing that, not necessarily promoting them in any way or shape.
Not that I feel like I said, I don't feel like we have any power to truly promote them.
Right.
But you don't want to feel like you're approving of them, I guess.
Right, I guess, yeah.
Is that it on that?
I think so. But it was just something we
felt we needed to discuss.
Needed to address, and you know that we noted.
Evan Ross Katz is a fashion and culture journalist who has interviewed us a couple times, and he's been pointing it out on social media, and he I believe is working on a piece that will come out soon.
He's very funny. He's very bright. And
he's a good journalist.
He's a good journalist, and we love his tweets. So
before we move on to Project Runway, you wanted me to address The Good Place.
Well, you're used to watching The Good Place. I kind of stopped watching it because
it had its finale last night.
Yeah, to me, it felt like it was very just over and over the same thing going over and over again. I didn't feel like it was progressing or developing. It kind of like they
I still
like
checked
stuck
in now and then, and I watched it. I never stopped watching it, but I agree that after the second season, all the tension went out of the show for me, and it was just about really good people, basically really good people struggling to fix the universe. I mean, there just wasn't, and you also knew what the ending of the show was going to be. Anyone who, I'm sorry, if you claim that there was any tension in the idea that they were all going to live happily ever after in heaven, I don't believe you. It was so obvious that that was the end point of the show. Right. So there, all the tension went out of it for me. I still enjoyed it. That cast is amazing.
They are amazing.
And there is very smart writing going. There was always very smart writing underneath it all. But the story lost me about, you know, 2 years ago, basically, two seasons ago. The but the finale was genuinely very touching, very cute. I guess, again, there's a little bit of criticism underlying that because that is really what the show was in the end, a very touching, very cute show. Personally, I don't have that much of an interest in shows that the entire point of the show is to basically make you feel good. I know that the show asked some philosophical questions about goodness and you know, whatever, the meaning of life and stuff like that. And sometimes it managed some depth in the way it answered those questions. But more often than not, it kept things very shallow because it is a television show. It's only a half hour long each week. And it was on network television. So it never really had the depth or the profundity that I think some people ascribe to it. It was entertaining. The cast was fun. And last night's episode, I got a little watery watching it just because they really did write lovely endings for all the characters. But there was just this sense of inevitability. The clock winding down. Like, let's exit. Let's show them the exit because they're just good people now that you really like, and they all love each other, and they saved the universe, and they're just living their best. There's literally no tension in it whatsoever. And there hadn't been for a really long time. So I know that sounds, I mean, those of you who are huge Good Place fans, and I know that the show has a rabid fan base, an ardent fan base. I shouldn't say rabid. That sounds dismissive. An ardent fan base. So I don't want to offend anyone, but I felt the feelings. I got the feels, but I do feel like the show stopped being interesting some time back. Having said that, Kristen Bell was amazing in that finale. She was super great, and it was all on her. Ted Danson had a lot to do in that finale as well, and he also had a lovely send-off. But she was really amazing in several of her scenes.
I think she was really good throughout the entire show.
Yeah.
What I love about the show, and it's nice to have that type of show, that the kind of humor that you don't laugh out loud, but it's very intelligent humor, and it makes you think for a minute, you know, about why you're laughing about it. You know, it's very social or political, or, you know, it has some other connotation, I think.
Right.
That is not just a funny line. That's how I felt about the show. I watched it a couple of seasons, but then I lost interest. But anyway, yeah, nothing else. I'm obsessed with The Outsider, and I'll talk about that later on HBO.
I'm so bored by it.
Yeah, well, you're always bored about everything, but I love it. Joking. But I'm obsessed with the show. I think it's slow. I agree with you. It's slow. It's taking a long time to get to the actual, you know, point. I don't know. But I'll have a review later, but I'm still very I have watched every episode like several times. I'm obsessed with it. But anyway, I think that's it. Not much.
That's it on the TV landscape.
Yes.
Do you want to get straight into Project Runway?
Yes. Well, yeah. Speaking of TV land.
Last night, I had a laugh because we've been doing nothing but complaining about sheer fashion on the runway for the last like 5 years. And I actually am surprised that it took Project Runway this long to have a sheer challenge. The results were completely unimpressive because all I kept thinking was, come on, you guys have seen 1,000 pieces walk the runways in the last 5 years of sheer dresses, and this is the best all of you could do.
Right.
None of them seem to have any clear understanding of what the sheer trend encompasses.
Having said that, I appreciate that in a way, I feel that the challenges are creative. In a way, they're different. They haven't done that type of challenge before.
No, I agree. That's why I said I was surprised they hadn't done a sheer challenge before because seemed so inevitable. No, I liked the idea of the challenge, even though I hate sheer fashion. It has been the trend for a while now.
I miss.
I just don't understand why the results were so piss poor.
I miss a wedding dress challenge. I wish they did it. That would be awesome. I still remember. What was it? Season 1? Yes, season 1. They had a wedding gown challenge. and it was awesome. So I don't know. I just wish they did it again. But it was sheer genius, as they call it, the episode. And so, yeah, it's pretty much it. It was, they had to come up with a design that was sheer.
And on trend, and I didn't feel most of them were.
I know. The results weren't great, but let's talk about, is that Dae Young?
Yes, Dae Young finally left the competition.
Yes.
She succumbed to whatever was ailing her, and she couldn't go on. I do feel the editing is very odd around this. I don't want to make implications, but whatever. I guess her immune system broke down, or she was exhausted, or whatever.
I think she was overwhelmed, and that affected her, I don't know, body and emotions and everything. Anyway, she seemed overwhelmed with the whole thing, putting a lot of pressure on her, and I think that's why she felt sick. That's my take on it, which is sad because she's, you know, she was doing okay. And it was an interesting point of view as a designer, different one. So
right.
Anyway, so they brought Marquise back.
Which
seems fair. He's good too.
And then Victoria almost walked out
and
because
Victoria,
she's such
yes.
a major drama
oh my
queen.
God,
I can't even with her.
She's such a drama queen and you know, and she's playing to get sympathy. You can tell that she's just playing to an audience. You know, she's just saying all these things that she doesn't really mean it. She doesn't really want to go, but she says those things so people can, you know, tell her, oh no, don't go, stay, you're so great. You know, that kind of like passive aggressive behavior, which it's annoying.
I'm just getting tired of her meltdowns
right,
every week.
Right, right, right.
And she is, as Christian pointed out, making the same damn
I'm glad
design
she, yeah.
over and over again. And even, I mean, her piece this week was a frickin' disaster, but the judges still found like, oh, it's
well,
so body
we'll
conscious.
Get to that.
And
we'll
I'm
get
like,
to
what the hell?
We'll
that model that. Is in rags.
We'll talk about that.
And it wasn't even sheer. I don't understand why so many of them had a problem with
right.
this. I mean, it should be noted that this was a one-day challenge. And
right.
working in any sort of sheer fabric is going to be technically very much more
right,
difficult.
Right.
So, okay, they kept their, most of them kept their designs distressingly simple. Some of them had, I don't know. Do you want to do the runway
yeah,
show?
Yeah, we'll do. Because but I'm glad that Christian said, you know, and I laughed because he said, well, Victoria, let's have a real chat here. And it's funny because I do like Christian as the mentor because he really tells, you know, he, it's not like he's hiding anything or he's, you know, fearful of saying anything about the design or how he really feels about a garment. He you know, he has an honest, quote-unquote, honest conversation with the designers, and I appreciate that. So I'm glad he told Victoria that she was sending down the runway the same design over and over again, different fabric. She didn't like it. She actually was avoiding him.
She doesn't like any criticism.
Yeah, she doesn't like criticism, yes. But anyway, that's not healthy when you're a fashion designer. But
no.
So, so we had, yes,
runway?
We had the runway
first up is Sergio. Who won, correct?
Yes, Sergio won. It's a sheer dress, obviously.
Like a sheath gown with a lot of fringe hanging off it.
It's
a Chinese-inspired design.
Sort of like an embroidery fabric. And then he decided to have all these fringe hanging, but it looks odd to me. I still think it's odd. You know, when the model moves, you know, it's an interesting look because you see the fringe moving. But the places, it's an odd way of placing the fringe.
Aside from, I agree, but it is well fitted and technically very well made. I think the style of it is couldn't be more basic. But even though I hate the fringe, I do kind of understand the win.
Right.
I can't really argue with it.
It reminded
technically,
me,
it was really well done.
Right. It reminded me of a cheap version of a Marquesa dress. Cause,
I didn't get that.
I did. And it's an interesting dress. Maybe without the fringe. I didn't like the fringe at all. And then next up is Brittany.
She's doing a pink, ruffly, pleated sort of romper with enormous puffy sleeves. Honestly, I didn't like this last night, but in the light of day, it's like, well, she did put some work in. She did try and make something that looks on
right.
trend.
It's
tortured.
First of all, she did that in one day, which is insane. And I think she likes puffy sleeves. I think she
mentioned that. Oh, it's a top and a pair of shorts. It's not a romper.
Yes. And I like it. I like it. I don't know why the judges just, you know.
I think it looks, she tried to do too much, and the end result looks a little tortured.
The thing is that you can't really see the design with so much fabric and the way she designed the look. You can't see all the elements. And because it's sheer, it just blends in, and you see just fabric on the model. But I liked it. I thought it was kind of dramatic.
Next up is
Marquise,
and they really love this, and I don't even get it. He used a sheer with a silver, applique of animals, different kinds of animals all over it.
It looks like sequin to me, no?
No, I don't think so. Maybe it is. Maybe it is sequins. It's shiny and silvery and sheer black fabric, and this dress could not be more basic. I have no idea why the judges praised it.
They just went on and on about it, and it had a lot to do with the guest judge because she liked the dress, and she went on and about it, and then they felt like they all had to agree with the dress.
Right.
Love the dress. It was just, no, it's a very basic look. I don't know. You can tell that the fabric is doing all the work here.
The fabric is doing all the work.
And
there's not a lot of design to it.
And when Project Runway designers do that, you know, it's all about the fabric. There's no design, actually.
Right.
And I find that very, you know, lame and lazy.
Next up is Jeffries. And I really thought the judges were out of line on this one. They put him on the bottom, although they did wind up complimenting it. To me, this looked very Agatha Ruiz de la Prada, very Del Pozo. It has that sort of cartoony fashion.
Kind of Bauman, too, in a way, the shoulders.
I don't understand why they didn't. They wanted an editorial look, and I'm like, okay, how's that not editorial? The only thing I could think is it's not, in terms of shape and color and everything, it's not very on-trend. So it doesn't look like something you would see on a magazine cover right now.
It's not very trendy. And I think the judges had a problem with the combo of hard and soft.
I thought it was interesting.
Which I thought it was interesting. But they kept talking about her breasts, that they could see it.
Which, I'm sorry, that was totally for the audience at home.
Yeah.
Every one of those people have either
mounted shows
or sat in shows or walked in shows where you could see nipples. You could see the model's nipples. We haven't described this. It's a short blue mini dress with puffy sleeves and this black and white striped motif across the shoulders. And it has a very sci-fi sort of feel to it. But I thought it was one of the strongest, if not the strongest design of the night, but it just didn't look very 2020.
I know, but this would photograph beautifully.
I agree, but it doesn't look...
modern, I guess?
It just doesn't look like what's happening right now, and I guess that was their... But it was not a bad design
at all.
No,
it wasn't a bad design. I didn't think so.
And it was an impressive amount of work.
I think... somebody liked it. Nina? Was that Nina?
I think Elaine Welteroth actually praised it.
Right. Somebody did. Look at the back. I do like it.
I know. It's amazing what he accomplished. I really don't think he belonged in the bottom at all.
I agree.
Next up is Chelsea, who also wound up in the bottom and then went home for this sort of sheer pale blue, almost trench coat style dress, except she did these bizarre ribbon sleeves that just completely detracted from
the sleeves are
design.
Terrible.
They are.
Very distracting. They went on and on about what she called a top or a bralette, but it's
just ribbon wrapped around her boobs.
Right. That's not really great. But I do like the design in general.
The idea of doing some sort of trench dress was a cute idea for a sheer challenge. Although... Carly Kloss introduced the challenge wearing a sheer trench coat, so maybe that wasn't as original.
I know,
as her.
But I didn't hate it. I thought it was.
I didn't hate it.
I thought it was interesting. If you didn't have the sleeves,
I can't
would be
really argue with sending her home. There were way too many problems.
No,
with it.
But come on, Victoria, are you kidding me?
Granted, yes, okay. Victoria should have gone home.
Nancy.
We'll get there in a second. Nancy, they also really praised this, and I thought it was extremely basic. I will give her that she did some really good seaming and technical work, but the design itself strikes me as very
basic.
Listen,
Nancy's look you can find at any store.
Yeah.
The same look lined.
Basically, yes.
Basically, yeah. It's a very basic, it's a great dramatic look on the red carpet, but it's the kind of like show the treatment that you see all the time. And the type of dress that she designed. It's again, the fabric doing all the work. is kind of dramatic with the you know, with the neckline.
I don't know. That just felt like she went on and on about how it was a zero waste dress. And I was like, yes, it looks like you trimmed it in your scraps. That's right. What that sort of cowl neckline
did. It's all about the neckline. And if you look at that, it's not that impressive. Shoulder, you know, but it's kind of basic neckline. And it's, I wasn't impressed. And I, like I said, you can go to any store and you can find that dress. But the judges loved it. But again,
a lot to choose from.
Well, that's what I was.
But I would have put Jeffrey in the top over Marquise. Was Marquise in the top or did that? Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
I would put Jeffrey in the top and sent Marquise somewhere safe.
Yeah.
I would not have put him. It doesn't make any sense to me. Then it was literally one of the most technically proficient pieces on that runway, and I would argue the most memorable. So mm-hmm. It just seems crazy to me. You were looking for editorial.
Right.
Anyway, here comes Victoria's stitched together placemats or whatever the frick that. It's hideous.
First of all, she didn't know what sheer meant, which is fine. I get it. But then, you know.
They explained it to her several times.
And if you don't know what it is,
she's stubborn.
Just ask people.
Christian tried to help her out in selecting fabrics in Mood. She wouldn't listen to him. So, I mean, I feel like this I didn't understand the word thing is another one of those sort of convenient excuses that pulled out. You were being stubborn, and you don't like having any restrictions put on your design process, and you collapse when it happens, and this was the result.
Right. It's the same thing with the previous challenge. I don't like flowers. All right. A, you picked a flower print, and B, you're going to complain about it the whole time. You did the same thing here.
Right.
And ended up designing something that it's horrible.
Right.
It's just horrible. It looked horrible. You could tell the model was uncomfortable.
She was barely holding it together.
Yes.
And it was such BS because they were looking for some reason to keep her in. So they were like, well, I was really impressed with how banging the model's body looked. And I'm like, okay, that's because the model's body is banging.
Yeah.
That has nothing to do. I mean, she made a fairly basic tight dress, except it's really badly made, and you're like, wow, it's so tight. Good for you. Like, that's not a reason to keep her in.
Well, that's when the judges get on my nerves, because he gets to a point like, all right, you need to...
They have to justify the decision.
You need to defend this look. All right, so go. 500 words on this mess. Go ahead.
Give us a reason not to send her home,
so
because she's a drama queen.
So they just go and go. They keep going. You're like, what the hell are you talking about? That was Victoria last night. And they went on and on about how brave she is. You shouldn't give up. I mean, you're love for fashion, blah, 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 blah. When other times they go, well, this is all great, but we're judging a look here. So then
it's
never,
all arbitrary.
I know.
It's reality television. I can't get angry at it anymore.
I know. But it's just like, come on, people. Sometimes it's way too obvious. And I just laugh or get annoyed. But Victoria, I don't know. I would have sent her home. Sorry, no.
Oh, I think that's just a given. But they wanted to keep her in. Personally, I find Chelsea's point of view and personal style much more interesting than Victoria's.
Yes.
And if it was down to those two, I absolutely would have kept Chelsea and sent Victoria home. This is the second disaster in a row. And the only time she did anything good is when she just kept copying herself.
Right.
She's clearly extremely limited as a designer.
I think a Project Runway designer succeeds when you still remember a look that they have, you know, designed. Like throughout, you know, every season, there's one or two or three. And Chelsea, I still remember the varsity jacket or dress she designed. I mean, you know, it's about having a point of view that is so strong that you still remember. And sometimes that happens when I'm putting all the looks together for the post. I'm putting the post together and I have to line up all the looks. Sometimes they have some looks have such a strong point of view that I know exactly who designed it. Sometimes I have to actually go back and check who did it.
Right.
Because it's such a bland, such a basic look that anyone could have designed. And, you know, that's not what you're looking for here.
Next up is Delvin, who it's safe because I feel like the top half, it was like just a bandeau top with a couple straps on it. But he did kind of an interesting skirt. He did like an inlay of red as a stripe, and he kept it sheer the whole time. It's not bad. It's just there's nothing to the top half.
I do like the skirt, but the top is just a very basic top. And and the model. She's gorgeous, man. She's very pretty.
I don't remember her.
I know.
I don't really pay that much attention to the models anymore.
But she came down and was like, wow, you're really selling this look. You look amazing.
Yeah.
I think that's it. Top was Nancy, Marquise, and Sergio, and Sergio won. And my God, I can't wait.
He's going to be insufferable.
Oh my God, he's going to be insufferable. And bottom was Chelsea, Jeffrey, and Victoria. And then they sent Chelsea home.
Which I would not have done.
No, not at all. Not at all. I think she's way more creative, has a lot more interesting things. Than Victoria, for example.
Yep.
And Jeffrey, I don't understand why he was bottom. But anyway, that's that.
That is it for this week. It's a slightly shorter podcast, little potpourri of topics. And we'll be back next week with more opinions on whatever passes in front of our eyes. We will be posting those tour dates on our site very soon. But I wanted those people in those cities to know that we were coming to those cities.
Yes, we're coming
soon. So circle dates on your calendar.
I can't wait to see you guys.
Once again, if you are a bookseller, if you sell books for a living, we will send you a gift-wrapped copy of the book with a personal note from us if you send us an email to TLO@TomandLorenzo.com, subject line bookseller, your name, the name of your store, and the store's address, and we will have that out to you ASAP, pronto. All right. Thank you, kittens, for all your support. We'll be back next week. Love you, mean it. Bye-bye.
Bye.